Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is great to have you here on a Wednesday. Actually, great to have you every single day, but great to have you today. Good show. ATP, Podcast Wednesday, open phones, lots to get to. Welcome to the show. Quicken Loans is bringing you the program because they are bringing you this studio, the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. All right, cell phone number is 1-800-636-8686. I do have an interview coming up next segment. We are talking USF football. Again, running back Jordan Cronkright is going to join me next segment. Next hour, Cam Jordan of the Saints. And in hour number three, just added the mayor, Sean Casey, former MLBer and an MLB Network analyst. So we are set. 3 hours, three good hours. I've got three good interviews for you and lots to cover. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter, please, at Jim Rome. And you know where to email me, Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. All right, let's get started. Got to start with some baseball. I've got a lot to say about the Dallas Cowboys and the drama going on with them. Can't lead with that after the Red Sox did the Yankees last night, but I've got lots to say about the Dallas Cowboys, Jera, Jason, Dez, and more. And a Podcast Wednesday. Remember last week we had Pat McAfee in studio. I thought that was such a great segment, but it left me wanting more. We go long form with Pat McAfee a little bit later on today when our podcast drops. Starting with some baseball, starting with the Red Sox over the Yankees, Boston over New York 4-3 to win that series, and that means just one thing. Only one thing we can do right now. Alvin, drop a beat. We all love the Red Sox, always have and what an absolutely will. Intimidating hype track. How amped are you hearing that? Game 4 last night in New York. Facing elimination and the possibility that the Red Sox would celebrate in their house again, the Yankees pulled out every last stop. They had Bucky Dent throwing out the first pitch. They had a starting pitcher in CC Sabathia who definitely knew when that game started. They had that stadium rocking. They had everything. They had all of that, but none of it mattered. And not because the Yankees aren't good. They are. Anybody who tries to tell you otherwise is a moron. You cannot suck your way to 100 regular season wins. They are good. They're really good. But the Red Sox are better. They're much better. And while Aaron Boone might be a good first-year manager, Alex Cora is just better. Much better. Who else is putting Brock Holt into the lineup in Game 3 and then watching him hit for a cycle and then replacing that guy in the lineup for Game 4? And then watching his replacement, Ian Kinsler, do this.
Pierce leading at third, the pitch. Swing, there's a shot to left field. Gardner going back, reaches up, jumps, it's over his head, and one hops the wall. Kinsler on his way to second base, and he is in there with a stand-up double, and the Red Sox lead it 2-0.
You know, it came down to this, too. In that series, the Red Sox were clutch. The Yankees weren't. The Red Sox were masters of the two-out knock. The Yankees weren't. Alex Cora was not afraid to make a move with his starter, and Aaron Boone was. Because for the second straight game, Boone left his starter in too long. CeCe is a warhorse. He's a legend. He's just shy of 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins. But as much as the big fella wanted it last night, he just did not have it. And Aaron Boone waited too long for confirmation. Cora, on the other hand, worked his bullpen to perfection, including bringing in Chris Sale in the eighth. You see, that's the thing. Not all of Cora's moves were obvious. Some of them could backfire in a huge way. Like if Ian Kinsler doesn't have an RBI double and a run scored, you know Sox fans are lighting Cora up for taking out Holt. And if Sale doesn't have a dominant eighth and he gets into trouble because he's not used to coming out of the pen, then Cora gets lit up for that too. But not by his players. They would never light this guy up. They love this guy, and they speak the truth about him. Check out what Rick Porcello had to say to Jeff Passan after the game. Quote, "For somebody who's managing in his first year, it sure doesn't feel like it. He seems like he's been doing this for a long, long time. What we feel in this clubhouse is how much he really, truly, genuinely cares about us." He went on to say, quote, "We may be ball players. maybe not the most educated people in the world, but you sense those sort of things. Who's leading the helm, and I can't say enough good things about him. I'm so grateful to be here, to be playing for him. It's not bull bleep. It's not anything other than I love the fact that I'm playing for Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox right now, end quote. I mean, there it is right there. This is in large part why Cora's moves do pay off. This is why Chris Sale told Cora that he wanted to come out of the pen last night, even though the last time he did it, it was a disaster, but it worked last night. No, instead, the most obvious move that actually put the Red Sox in trouble was when they turned to closer Craig Kimbrell in the ninth. And this dude nearly puked all over the infield. The seven-time All-Star came in with a 4-1 lead. He immediately walks Aaron Judge on four pitches. Then he allows a knock to Didi Gregorius. Now the huge offseason acquisition comes to the plate with a chance to tie that game with one single swing.
Two on, nobody out, 1-2. Swing and a miss, strike three, got him. Got him to chase the curveball again. Stanton strikes out. There's one out in the ninth.
Go yard there against the Red Sox in the bottom of the ninth, and you are a legend for life. You'll never buy another drink in New York. You'll never buy another meal in New York. You'll never have to do anything ever again in New York. But Stanton didn't. Could have gone legend. Instead, he went to the bench. And it felt like the momentum was swinging back to Kimbrell. But Kimbrell wanted no part of that, right? He seemed bound and determined to blow this save any way possible. Because he then promptly walks Luke Voit to load the bases. Then he hits Neil Walker to drive in a run. Sox fan is losing his freaking mind at that point. But give Kimbrell this. The guy did find new and different ways of crapping his pants at the worst possible time. And then comes Gary Sanchez, another guy who could seriously use some redemption.
The payoff pitch from Kimbrell to Gary Sanchez. Here it is. Swung on and hit high and deep to left field. It'll be playable for Benintendi. At the warning track, he'll make the catch. Gregorius will score. It's a one-run game, but the Red Sox now need one more out.
Just missed that. Just missed it. Fraction of an inch in a different direction on contact. Sanchez leaves the park last night, and he's in Monument Park this morning. But he just missed it, which set up this.
The 1-2. Swung on, tapped down to third, slowly hit. Charging is Nunez. He fires to first. Stretch. Got him! What a play by Pierce. And the Red Sox have won the division series against the Yankees. However, Aaron Boone might challenge this call.
Bang, bang. Or was it? They go to instant replay. But they didn't need to. He was out. Only thing I wish that Angel Hernandez had been at first base for that final call instead of behind the plate. That would have been awesome. That would have been truly poetic. Almost as poetic as the Red Sox bumping this in the clubhouse after that game. Get it, fellas. That's the Red Sox clubhouse. They're playing New York, New York as they're popping champagne in New York, New York. Best troll job I've seen in a long time. I'll say it again. The Yankees are good. The Sox are better. Right now. Better team, better manager, better organization. They're just better. And they proved it again in your house, Yankee fan. Red Sox moving on. God, I love that hype track. How can you not get amped hearing that song? All right, 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. I'll take it from either side. That sets up a tremendous showdown. Yankees, Astros. You know what that means. You hear that squawk? Adam Hawk's in the house. Let me lay out the XR4TI for you from my left to my right. Alvy?
Dude.
Adam Hawk. And there's an empty chair in the back row. Chael Jr. is not here. Jury duty. You just sent some photos from the courthouse. Dude, I hope you're doing your very best to make yourself as unattractive as possible. Providing your civic duty, doing your best. Ross is here. Let's see, Nate in Appleton on Twitter. He says, I could care less about the Red Sox and Yankees. Those insufferable fans and players can all go away. At least the rest of us can now relish in watching the Astros finish off the East Coast so we don't have to listen to these bags in the World Series. Nate, I know where you're coming from. And there is an element of that, right? That both the Red Sox and Yankee fans are insufferable if you're outside those areas and you can't deal with either one of them. And now you've got Houston to put them out of their misery. Don't forget, the Red Sox did win 108 games this year. But then I like where the Astros are coming from. Under the radar, as much as any defending champ could be, disrespected, feeling like nobody's giving them credit. That makes them dangerous, really dangerous. Jamie in Green Bay tweets, just got that Red Sox song out of my head from the last time you played it. Thanks for nothing. Can we get the Jason Avant song to cleanse the palate? There is something about that song. I'm not going to lie. I've woke up in the morning with that Red Sox song going in my head. That song. Once that's in your head, there's nothing you can do. Let's try it, Alvin. Let's see. Can you bump the Jason Avant song, and will that make the We All Love the Red Sox song go away?
Jason Avant.
I need a little more than that, don't I?
Jason Avant, he is the man. Jason Avant has got great hands.
Hey, Jamie. Hey, Jamie, do I look like Casey Kasem to you? Do I look like Dick Clark to you? Does this look like an FM request radio show to you? Let me tell you something, Jamie. I will choose the songs around here. Hey, Jamie. Hey, Jamie, have some. I will choose the songs around here, Jamie. You don't like it? To quote Mike Tyson, turn off your station. All right, more of that. It wasn't it...
You have a problem, turn off your station.
Thank you. Wasn't it the Yankee fans who were saying, we want Boston, we want Boston, we want Boston? Well, you got Boston. And you got rolled again, and they celebrated in your house again. Careful what you wish for. More on the Dallas Cowboys. What a soap opera, just the way Jerry likes it. Jerry is doing what Jerry does best. Jerry is running a misdirection. Jerry is laying some bait. Dez took the bait, and he's doing what he always does. He's getting us to look over there. Hey, hey, look over there. Stop looking over here and looking at our really horrible football team. Look over there instead. And it's working for him. But I see you working, old man. Meantime, how about that division, the NFC East? The Giants. That dumpster fire burning in the Bronx is not the only blaze that needs extinguishing right now. Burn the it. Giants are way worse. How about that matchup? Eli trying to clap back on Lil Wayne. Is there a worse idea than that? Could that have gone any worse for Eli than it did? I meant to get to RPO F5. RPO F5, Rome Price Opinion. I tried to get to it yesterday. I wasn't able to do so. I will have that for you today. And it's a podcast Wednesday. Jim Rome Podcast. Pat McAfee is going to be my guest. I'm going to tape that a little bit later on. Drop it this afternoon. Pat's got a new documentary out. And again, I thought he was so good in studio last week that I want to spend some more time. So we'll do that. And one quick email. She is back with a vengeance. She had gone away for several weeks, maybe a couple of months, and now she's back with a vengeance. Part of the reason for that, I'm sure, Patriots, Red Sox. Hi, Jim. On behalf of the Boston Red Sox, Q Randles. Yeah! On behalf of the Boston Red Sox, it feels so good to beat those rats in New York. Sarah T. That had to feel good. Always good to get the rats in their own house. When we return, we're talking USF football. Jordan Cronkite is my guest. That's coming up next. Cam Jordan, next hour. Sean Casey, who will be shot out of a cannon in hour number three. Pat McAfee, later today. It's a good day. Really good day. Stay with it. You're in the jungle, and I'm looking for a telephone call. 1-800-636-8686.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show. you're in a 5 minute.
Nation, get your ears on this. We are joined right now by running back for USF, the American Athletic Conference Offensive Player of the Week. 23 carries for a school and conference record, 302 rushing yards in Saturday's win over UMass. Three straight games with more than 100 rushing yards and a touchdown. USF is 5-0. They're 1-0 in conference play. They're at Tulsa on Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. We are joined by running back Jordan Cronkrite. Jordan, great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, I'm great. Jordan, I am great. You had 23 carries for 302 yards, an utterly ridiculous day. And you came into that game against UMass with back-to-back 100-yard games. I've got to first ask, how were you feeling before kickoff? Did you have any idea you had something that special in you for that game?
Well, before I even get to that, I just want to know, how do I get racked? I just need to know.
Dude, I'll tell you how. You rush for 300 yards, you get racked. You're already racked, man. You don't have to do anything else. You're good, man. You're already good. You're all good. You're golden. That's cool,
thank
man.
Thank you. I mean, going into the game, into kickoff, I did not expect that. I was just trying to help my team win. Wasn't that many, too many people at the game. It was a kind of quiet atmosphere, but I didn't expect us to not go out there and perform, but I definitely was not expecting that.
You might not have been expecting that, but I have to be honest. I expected that kind of answer from you because this is what you do. You give credit to the offensive line, and you're really humble about that. But the fact is, you had a 77-yard run in the third quarter, ninth longest in school history. You had a 76-yarder right after that, which was 10th longest in school history. Can you take me through those plays? What did you see on them?
Offensive line, they made a huge hole. I mean, all I had to do was just run through his contact, and we saw the same, like, exact plays on film and how the safeties are going to fit and how he's going to try to tackle me. And then once I got to him, I knew what move I was going to do. I knew he was going to try to shoot at my legs. And then after that, I just ran to the end zone. I knew nobody was going to catch me, so.
We're talking USF football. They didn't have a chance. Now, so you're rolling in a game like that, and you're putting up numbers, and head coach Charlie Strong keeps you out there to give you a chance to maybe stack a few more. What did it mean to you that he allowed you to have that opportunity?
It's a great honor. I'm really appreciative of him letting me stay out there and break a record. Shows that he has a lot of trust in me, and he's appreciative on his side of how much hard work I put in the offseason and during the week in practice.
So what's he been like to play for so far?
Great coach, amazing coach, players coach, and he's always looking out for the team, and he wants nothing but the best for us, and I would never trade another coach in for him ever.
You know, Jordan, your offensive coordinator, Sterling Gilbert, talks about how much he likes the fact that you bring a calmness to the field, and it seems like being calm on a football field would be like the hardest thing to do because there's so much chaos around you at all times, but the very best running backs all seem to have that calmness about them. They seem to have that patience as well. Where does that come from for you?
Our running back coach, Sean King, he preaches to us every day in practice just to be calm under chaos and being able to function when things aren't going right. And even when they are going right, you got to be able to channel that energy and keep that focus and be locked into the game. Because as you've seen during the season, like some of our games, not a lot of things have go well for the offense, but we have to be able to go play by play and try to execute and do our job. So that's what I try to bring to the room, especially with me being one of the older people on the offense. I just try to bring that to the room.
Jordan Cronkrite joining us, coming off a 302-yard rushing day. You know, you started your career at Florida. For those who don't know, you end up going to USF. How did you end up at USF, and what appealed to you about that situation?
I had a smidge of success at UF. Met a lot of people, had great relationships with people over there. Then I decided to leave after my second year. Ended up getting in contact with Coach Strong because he recruited me when he was at Texas. And then Coach Cogdell was also here. And then Coach King, he knew my high school coach. And then I got in contact with Coach King. Then we set up a day to come for a visit in the spring So then I came on a visit and then saw how the players interacted with the coaches. And then I also knew some of the players that were here. So then I just got a feel from them. And then I sat down with my parents and then weighed pros and cons of other schools that I was looking at the time. And then I felt like this was the best place for me. And so that's how I ended up here.
Now, of course, you had to sit out for a year, and that's got to be a different kind of experience for somebody like you. It would be easy to get frustrated, maybe get down, but you had a role on the scout team, and it seems like you really embraced it. What did you learn in that process, and how did you approach that year off?
I approached the year off like I was still on the regular side of the ball on offense. The coaches would tell me just to go out there and practice as if I had a game on the week coming up, and try to work on my craft. Even though I'm not playing this year, I didn't want to sit back there and lose some of the ability that I had and just slacking off and not being it mentally and physically. And I just took it as a challenge to myself just to get better. And then also on the other side, push my teammates and give them a look, because I was doing a service for them to give them a look for the upcoming game.
So USF wins 10 games last season, and you're out quickly. You're 5-0 this year. When I've talked to Charlie Strong in the past, we've talked about the upside and the potential of the program. So where do you come out? How good can USF football be year in and year out?
With Coach Strong being our coach, sky's the limit. Like I say, he's a great coach. Right now we're sitting 5-0 going into Tulsa week. The best thing about that is we haven't played our best game yet, so we have a lot to improve on, and I'm really excited about that.
Jordan, before I let you go, let me ask you this. I mean, you're having a lot of success. You're putting up crazy numbers, stacking crazy numbers, and you're still really humble about the whole thing. You give credit to the offensive line. You say they make your job easy. All you have to do is run a straight line. I mean, if anybody could have a big head out of this thing, it would be you, but you don't. Where does the humility come from?
Ultimately, it comes from my mother, my father, and my grandmother. My dad had a pretty good job, and my grandmother did as well. They work really hard. I have six siblings, and I'm the second oldest, and my siblings look up to me, and I just try to do what I'm supposed to do. I don't take credit for anything. Like, I could easily take credit as me being top dog in my house and my family, but I don't ever do that, and I could do that on the football field as well because of what I've done so far here at this school, and I don't ever take credit for that because I'm just doing what I'm asked, and there's other people putting a lot of hard work into it as well, and they're just trying to help me be successful. So I think that's where it comes from.
All right, so to answer the question, how do you get racked with an answer like that? That's how you get racked. And also, 302 rushing yards isn't a bad thing either. 23 carries and a conference record. 302 rushing yards. USF is 5-0. They're 1-0 in conference. They're at Tulsa on Friday. Running back Jordan Cronkright, my guest. Jordan, great job. Really nice to have you on, man. Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Appreciate you and your humility, especially given the numbers you're stacking. And a quick shout-out to my man, Jay DeBramo, the assistant director of communications at USF. I love these guys. I love that program. I love their social media. My man, Jay, that's my dude right there. Jay, good looking out. Thanks for helping us, as always. They are great to work with. And as long as they're playing the way they are, dominating people, putting up numbers, we will always talk USF football on this show. Get your ears on it. 1-800-636-8686. All right. Also, don't forget, coming up next hour, we'll talk to Cam Jordan, Saints defensive end. Always a great conversation with him. Sean Casey coming up in hour number three. I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. I want to talk about the New York Giants. Lots of other NFL that I want to get to as well. Like I said, it's going to be a good day. Podcast Wednesday, ATP. We're shorthanded with the XR4TI. There's an empty chair. Hey, flight deck, shouting out to the deck, James Kelly. Dude, if you know Chael Jr.'s not here, how do you not get your ass down here? Come on, flight deck, we're going ballistic here without you.
Ballistic!
So I've got multiple takes on the Cowboys. Jerry and Jason, Jera and Dez, and it all kind of comes together. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. But first, I do owe you a sports update, so here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It is time to ask the pros. You get to ask me a question, and it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. What you need to do is go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, submit a question right there, and think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. This email says, Rome, there are fewer things more satisfying in sports than seeing D-bag Yankee fan with his halfway done-up gamer in multiple gold chains and incredulous a-hole anger eating a season-ending L. Hopefully the bags from Beantown go down to the Astros to double down on the satisfaction. Matt in Vancouver wore Greece's government banning obese American tourists from riding their donkeys. Matt's on brand. So is this guy. The subject of this guy's email is, and I quote, "Fire Boone's sorry ass right friggin' now. Dear Jim, I supported Aaron Boone all year, but his absolute butchering of games 3 and 4 is inexcusable. Too bad the boss wasn't still kicking. He would have fired the incompetent D-bag between innings. My fat ass father agrees. Rick in Buffalo." Rick, it is exhausting being you. And that was only two lines. Rick, you got to call with that. You got to call with that, Rick. I mean, I'll take the email, but it's not the same thing as hearing you. Rick in Buffalo.
War road rage with the kids in the back seat. It's never too early to teach them not to take crap from anyone.
My fat ass father agrees.
All right, Rick, anytime you want to call, you've got the telephone number. Use it. Make use of it. All right, continuing through hour number one, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. They have been off the radar. Jerry's not having that. Jerry needs you looking at him and talking about him. And I'm here to do exactly that. It's Wednesday, and we're still talking about the fact that Jason Garrett punted on 4th and 1 from the Houston 42 in overtime. So at a time when head coaches are more and more aggressive on 4th down, the guy with a massive offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield decides to play the battle for field position. He does that instead, and he craps out. So let me ask you this. What is the point of having one of the best lines in football and one of the best running backs in football if you're not going to use either one of them? Take the swing. Go for it. Make it, and then you've got a chance to win that game and maybe even save your season. But if you miss, you can stand at the podium and say, look, I had so much confidence in my offensive line. I've got one of the best backs we've ever had here. I knew we were going to make it. I'd make that call 10 times out of 10 times. That's how you handle that. You go for it, and if it doesn't work out, you just get up at the podium and you say that. Your guys will love you for it. They'll want to play harder for you because they knew that you had faith in them. Instead, by not going for it, he proves he's got no confidence in his team at all. He bailed. I mean, such a bad decision that even Jerry Jones, a.k.a. Jason Garrett Sr., took a break from comparing his offense to the Rams' offense to actually question a Jason Garrett decision. Jerry said, quote, "We were being outplayed there. Not out-efforted, but we were outplayed. But it's time for risk at that particular time. That's not second-guessing, but we were taking some risk, too, at certain points in the game." End of quote. That's pretty rich. Jerry wanted to make sure that you knew that he was not second-guessing his genius coach. So it's not a full-blown crackback, but compared to the cheerleading that he normally does for Garrett, that's a huge departure for Jarrah. And then given the heat that Garrett has taken for that move, again, the guy punted on 4th and 1 in overtime in the other team's territory in a game that he had to have. And then he ends up losing that game on a field goal. You think that knowing all that and the fact that we're still talking about it on Wednesday, that he's still getting hammered for it, you think that he would reconsider. You think that he'd say, you know what, I'd like to have that one back. You think that, but you'd be wrong.
It just made sense to us to me at that time to go ahead and play field position.
Yeah, it's great, Jason. That's awesome because it doesn't make sense to anybody anywhere at all. It doesn't make sense because since Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott have arrived in Dallas, your team is 18 for 19 on 4th-and-1. Were you not aware of that stat? Were you also not aware that your team did convert one earlier in the game too? Or did you know all of that and just freak out and coach scared when it mattered most in a game that you had to have? The only thing worse than not running a play, punching the other guy in the face, and finishing is all the hair splitting that this guy's doing right now in trying to explain it. You see, Garrett wants you to know that it wasn't what it appeared. He wants you to know that it wasn't actually 4th-and-1.
It was a long one. I was standing right there, so it was probably a yard and a half when we had it. We had a play that we liked. Unfortunately, they did a good job coming in and stuffing that. And actually, I think we probably lost a little bit on the third down play. So it got you to 4th and really kind of close to 2.
Pretty courageous. He just said it wasn't actually one. It was a long one.
It was a long one.
And maybe even actually 4th-and-2. And credit to them for the way they set up for it. I mean, none of this, hey, you know what? I don't care. We need to get it. We've got the line. We've got the back. We've got the quarterback. We're going to line up and punch him in the face. And then we're going to get the first down, move the chains, and win the game. Get the hell out of here. None of that. No. That's him splitting hairs and saying, you know, to be fair, it really wasn't 4th-and-1. It was a long one. All right. All right, coach. I guess that's why they pay you the big bucks. No, wait. Actually, why do they pay you the big bucks? I mean, don't get me wrong. I want everybody to make as much money as they possibly can. I'm never looking to rip a guy's job from him. But why does Jason Garrett have a head coaching job? Because Dak Prescott is not getting better. He's getting worse. You'd think that having a former quarterback as your head coach would help, but it hasn't. The offense is somehow less than the sum of its parts. That's not a good reflection on the head coach. You'd think that having a guy who ran an offense for a while would help, but it hasn't. So exactly what does this guy do well? What does Jason Garrett do well? Better yet, what does Jason Garrett do at all, aside from clap? But damn, dude can clap. My man can clap the hell out of it. If you're in a pressure situation and you need a head coach to come up with a perfect clap, you call on this redheaded clapper. Man, that dude can turn the lights on and off in 3 states with the way he claps. So, why doesn't Jerry Jones do something? It's his team. Why doesn't Jerry do something about his coach? Why does Jerry Jones not care? Why do Cowboy fans care more about the fact that their team sucks than their owner? That's the greatest mystery of all. This is the same guy who ran Jimmy Johnson out of town. Ran Jimmy Johnson out of town, but he keeps Jason Garrett around. Ran Jimmy Johnson the hell out of town, but keeps Jason Garrett around. And why is that? Because Jimmy was getting all the credit and Jerry was getting none. Never mind that Jimmy built the team and was ripping Lombardis like every single year. No one was looking at or talking about Jera. Well, they are now, Jera. And what they're saying is, you really don't want to win that badly. Because if you did, you'd hire a head coach who gave you the best opportunity to give you those wins. But what would that mean? That would mean you'd have to stay the hell out of his way. That would mean you'd have to let the head coach do it his way. And you're not having that, are you, Jera? I get it. It's your team. Do whatever the hell you want. Just don't tell your fans you're doing everything in your power to win because you're not. And Cowboy fan, if you think that Sunday's punt and eventual loss is enough to get Garrett fired, I would not hold your breath. If this guy has not been fired yet, there's no telling if or when he will ever be fired. He'll just keep on clapping his way to 8-8 every single year. And after all, why should Garrett sweat a terrible decision like that? This guy knows he's essentially unfireable. He knows it. Why should he go for it? Why not play the field position battle? What's the worst thing that could happen? He's not getting fired. We know this. Cowboy fans, seriously. I mean, seriously, don't just sit there and not respond. What do you think about that? Fourth and one from the other guy's 43.
It was a long one. I was standing right there.
My bad. Fourth and 1.5. Fourth and 1.75. Fourth and 1.625. Fourth and a yard and 3/4.
Close to two.
That's different. It's close to two. Bad spot. It's not really fourth and one. I'm being really unfair. It was actually almost 2 yards.
Close to two.
Yeah, and you got a badass offensive line, allegedly. Ezekiel Elliott, and you're still not going for it. See, like, if it had been fourth and a 16th, that'd be a totally different deal. But it was fourth and close to two. How bad does that sound, Cowboy fan? Do you really want a coach who's going to say, yeah, but it really wasn't fourth and one. It was really fourth and close to two.
It was a long one. I was standing right there.
Bro, you have an Ivy League background. You did not get up in front of the media and say that. It was a long one and close to two.
Close to two.
Now, Jerry's the master. Jerry knows. Jerry knows that's a terrible look. So what's Jerry going to do about that? He's going to get you to look the other way. He's going to get you to look at something else. And he did. And how did he do that? Easiest way possible. He said something that he knew would get back to Dez Bryant, and he knew that Dez would take the cheese, to quote Trevor Price. And Dez did, because Dez does. Dez always does. So that's a two-part take. Thanks, Alvy. Well done. And my two cents worth tweets. Jason Garrett didn't get out-coached. He got out-play-called. Let me tell you something, Chris. That was actually a long one, and it was close to two.
Probably didn't know that.
Dear Jim, I don't blame Jason Garrett for punting on fourth and one. The conservative option is always the best route. Yours, coaches that throw a screen pass on third and 22. Signed, Aaron in Omaha. Wore Frost and company, capturing victory number one due to my attendance in Evanston this weekend. Hey, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Do you ever think you'd see the day that Chip Kelly and Scott Frost would start 0-10? Yeah, I understand that the cupboard was kind of bare for both those guys, but 0-10? Two of the best college coaches you'll ever find. Hey, Rome. 27 rings, bro! Signed, Bag Yankee fans. John in Huntington Beach. Wore Justin Turner going legend in the NLCS. I could see it happening. I'm telling you, this guy, Dan in Denver's back. Hey, Jim, just turned on the simulcast. It's about time you fired Keith. Dude is a bigger disappointment than Notre Dame the last 20 years. You get off, Chael Jr. It's jury duty. Dan, you can't really get out of that, nor should you want to. It is your civic duty. You don't want to go, don't register. Just kidding about that. Fire Chael for jury duty? Hey, I don't think that would hold up. When we come back, Saints defensive end Cam Jordan. Top of hour number two. I've got the second part of my Cowboys take. There's more where that came from. And thoughts on the Giants and the NFC East overall. Stay tuned.